do want to greet each one in Jesus' name this morning. It's a privilege to be here to worship together. Let's begin by singing song number 389. Andy, would you lead that for us here in the church hymnal? I don't see Andy. Are you here, Andy? There you are. Okay, would you lead that for us? We'd love to hear some high tenor on the last verse there, if you would. Beautiful song. I love each verse there, and it closes with the most important time of our life, and that's the time when our life is no more, and we can trust the Lord in those times. This morning I've entitled a message, What Does Faith Look Like? Let's look at Luke chapter 5. And read a familiar account here. Luke chapter 5, I'm going to start reading at verse 17. And it came to pass on a certain day that as he was teaching, that there were Pharisees and doctors of the law sitting by, which were come out of every town of Galilee and Judah and Jerusalem. And the power of the Lord was present to heal them. And behold, men were brought in a bed, a man which was taken with a palsy, and they sought means to bring him in, and to lay him before him. And when they could not find by what way they might bring him in because of the multitude, they went upon the housetop and let him down through the tiling with his couch into the midst before Jesus. And when he saw their faith, he said unto him, Man, thy sins are forgiven thee. And the scribes and the Pharisees began to reason, saying, Who is this that speaketh blasphemies? Who can forgive sins but God only? But when Jesus perceived their thoughts, he answering said unto them, What reason ye in your hearts? Whether is it easier to say, Thy sins be forgiven thee, or to say, Rise up and walk? But that ye may know that the Son of Man hath power upon earth to forgive sins, he saith unto the sick of the palsy, I say unto thee, Arise, take up thy couch, and go into thine own house. Go into thine house. And immediately he arose up before them, took up that wherein he lay, departed to his own house, glorifying God. And they were all amazed and glorified God. And we were filled with fear, saying, We have seen strange things today. Going back to verse 22, or 20, rather, Jesus speaking, he said, When he saw their faith, how does faith look? What does faith look like? When Brother Joe was speaking this morning of that verse in Romans 8:28, it reminded me of a story that I've shared with a number of you, but I just love good stories, and this is one of the best stories that I know. It has to do with this verse. And it's in this book, Walking from East to West. So if you want to read a good book, read that book. But Ravi tells a story about when he was an evangelist in Vietnam, and he had with him a 17-year-old Vietnamese boy that was an interpreter. And as this interpreter was interpreting messages that he would preach to the different places he went, this boy was a Christian, and he was very a very strong Christian as well. But it wasn't too long until they left, till the evangelistic team left, and the Viet Cong took over, and Vietnam fell to the communists, and he was taken and put into prison and suspected as being a spy and accused of working with the CIA. And he did work some with them, but he was only as an interpreter. He was not spying. And so eventually, he was there a long time. And they brainwashed him, and they took all his English literature away from him, would not let him have anything except communist literature and French. And he was well-educated, just starved him intellectually. And one day he had the job to clean the latrine. And in the latrine he found a page that had English words on it. And it so gripped him that he took it up and he washed it off and he put it into his pocket. And as he took this paper out after he got back to his cell, he read those words. It was a page ripped from the Bible in Romans 8. And the first thing he read was, And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God. Just very shortly before that, a day or so earlier, he cried out to God saying, It's too hard for me. I can't go on. I have to give up. And I think he said it was just the very next day that he found this scripture, that he had nothing. He had no scripture for a long time until he had this. And then he read further, and he read those words that, What shall separate us from the love of God? And all of these things that are listed. He read those things, and he recognized that this is God speaking to him so directly. And the timing was so perfect. And it was such a blessing to him. And It was such a blessing to him, and he just recommitted his life to the Lord and just served him in a tremendous way. Well, the next day he asked the officer who had sentenced him to latrine duty if he could clean the latrine again. And the officer thought he was being sarcastic with him and told him that from now on you will clean the latrine every day. And this was a job that the prisoners all detested. And so that was his job. And every day he would find a paper. He would find pages of the Bible. He would wash them, take them, and read them for his devotionals. And that happened until he got out of prison. And when he got out of prison, he tried to get absorbed back into society again, but couldn't, and he tried desperately to leave. And he with a group of others, tried to leave Vietnam and tried to escape to Thailand. Well, just a short time before they were about to leave, some Viet Cong soldiers came and found out about it and told them that they questioned him. They asked him if he was going to leave, and he denied it. And he said, no, he won't. He's not. They're not planning to. And he completely denied that. After the men had gone, he felt so badly. He said, Lord, if I should tell them the truth, you will bring them back. And the time came closer for them to leave. And just an hour before they were going to leave, they had arranged a boat and everything for them to leave. And just a very short time, these four men came back. And he admitted that, yes, they did have an escape plan. They were going to go. He said, what are you going to do with me? Are you going to put me back into prison? They said, no, we want to go with you. And so they did. And these men had maritime skills. He says they would have been swamped on the boat had it not been for these four men that went with them to Thailand and escaped the communist regime there and got refugee status in Thailand. Well, from there he came on over to the United States. He was accepted in a college in California, and from there he made contact again with his friend. And it's just a beautiful story of how God worked through all those situations. You believe in the sovereignty of God? One of the things that helps to cement that belief is to hear present-day testimony to that end. We can believe the Bible. It's trustworthy. It's a word that's going to stand. But how does faith look? Faith looks like living it out in a day-to-day way many times. How does faith look? For Jesus, these men, these four men that brought Jesus to this house, they no doubt wanted healing for their friend. And there were obstacles that were almost insurmountable. I didn't notice before until somebody recently pointed this out that there were all these Pharisees and doctors that were from every town of Galilee and Judea, Jerusalem. They were all together at this one place. This was not an ordinary crowd of common people that were with Jesus at this time, but it was all these people. And maybe it was maybe a forbidding crowd. These people they were there to analyze what Jesus was doing and trying to figure this thing out. They just never saw anything like it. Here is a very difficult and a very different situation. There were these men that brought a man sick with, he was paralyzed, couldn't help himself, took him to the roof of the house, opened up the roof, let him down, and brought him into their midst, brought him into the midst where Jesus was. And just blesses me when it says here in verse 20, when Jesus saw their faith, this is what he saw. He saw these men working. He saw these men bringing another man to him to be healed. And no doubt he knew that healing was the biggest thing on their mind. And yet he touched something that was even more important than physical health, and that was his spiritual health. And he said unto him, man, thy sins are forgiven you. You know, it just shows that we can trust Jesus with the most important things in life. We think health is sometimes the most important thing, and all of us are we think that health is important. I do. Was not able to be here for some of the services last week. I listened to all of them, but I thought, you know, I'm going to be so happy when I feel better. And, you know, I am, but it's easy to forget good health. And we take it for granted way too often. But here, these men, health was something that was very important, but Jesus went deeper. And he healed his spiritual condition, and he said, thy sins be forgiven thee. Well, that brought him into question. And this crowd that was around him. It says, who can forgive sins but God only? Well, you know, they were right in a lot of ways, these doctors of the law, these Pharisees. They had a lot of things right, but there was one thing that they didn't have right, and that is that Jesus was God. And because that one fact was wrong in their thinking, they missed a huge opportunity to glorify God and to see God at work and to see the sovereignty of God. They believed in God, but they missed the huge opportunity because they didn't recognize Jesus as God. And Jesus showed them what his purpose was here. It was more than to heal the sick. It was more than to restore physical health to those that were ailing, but it was to take care of the deepest needs of men. And this is what he did here. Man, thy sins be forgiven thee, he said very plainly and clearly. How does faith look? Faith is bringing someone to Christ, bringing him into the presence of Christ. This morning, as I thought about being here on this very cold day, you know, for some of you, maybe cold temperatures don't affect you a lot, but as the birthdays pile on, we love to be close to a warm stove, close to someplace warm, and I don't like cold very much at all. Well, sometimes faith is simply being at church when it's very cold. You know, that's a simple way, because it would be a lot easier just to stay at home. But when we want to be in the presence of God, when we expect a blessing, I was so blessed with that thought of that the brother shared last week there, where it says that that hunger and thirst after righteousness is going to be filled. And it's not just a one-time thing, but it's a continual filling, a continual a hunger and a continual filling. That's what we can experience today. That's what faith feels. That's what faith looks like. It looks like people coming to church when it's easier to stay home. That's what faith looks like. Faith looks like bringing the needy to Jesus, knowing that there is answers. There he has the solution for that. I'm reminded the story of Joseph in Hebrews chapter 11. We don't very often speak much about Joseph when we think about the heroes of faith in Hebrews 11, but let me just read what it says here. Verse 22, it says, "By faith Joseph, when he died, made mention of his departing of the children of Israel and gave commandment concerning his bones." Now, that's the only verse that it speaks of Joseph there in that. But Joseph was a very prominent figure in the Old Testament. The most outstanding thing about Joseph, well, there were a lot of outstanding things, but the fact that he was unjustly sold to Egypt is really a big thing. I just finished a book called 12 Years a Slave, and it's a story about a black man in New York that was a free man, but he got into cahoots with a couple of other people that he was a good violin player, and they wanted him to play in their show play for them, and he promised him some money if he would go. And eventually he found himself sold as a slave in Washington, D.C., and then taken downriver. He was a free man. He had free papers. He had money in his pocket. He was never a slave. But he went through terrible troubles. The fact that he couldn't talk to anybody, that he was free. There was nobody that would believe a black man. Their word was not considered in any court. He was treated terribly. He had suffered terrible things. Well, that's what Joseph did too, many years earlier. Joseph was sold by his brothers, the people he should have trusted, the people he should have been the most trustworthy to in his life. He was betrayed and sold to them, sold to Egypt, and then not only that, then he was in the house of Potiphar, and he found himself in a good position. And it's a little bit like this story, 12 Years a Slave. He was beaten a few times by people that tried to break his spirit, but then eventually he found himself in a good place down there. And a so-called Christian man had him. He cared for his slaves, and he was kind to them, and he never beat them. Always, and he would read scripture to them on Sunday, and they had a pretty nice life, all of the ones that were on that plantation. And things went on like that for a short time until he got involved and had to take care of somebody else's debt, and then he had to get rid of some of his slaves, and this man was one that he had sold on down the line, and then he got into some very, very, very bad company, very dismal. And he was a God-fearing man. This black man was, slave was, but he got into terrible trouble. Just very much, probably more so than what Joseph did in the Old Testament, as far as being physically abused. But Joseph, there he was. Joseph found himself into a good place in Potiphar's house, and he was overseer of everything that he had. And he ordered his life with integrity. And when it came to a point where his great temptation, there was not a moment's wavering in his life. He just simply fled, leaving his garment in the hands of Potiphar's wife, which was the very thing that brought him to as a test, what she used as a testimony against him, completely false. You know, most of the time when we're accused, when we're misunderstood, there's usually a shred of truth to what is said about us, even if we're misrepresented. But for Joseph, there was nothing true. It was so completely false with the whole thing. First, his being sold into slavery, and then the accusation that she brought. And there he was, wasting away in prison. And finally, he had the opportunity there. He even made good. Finally, he had the opportunity to interpret some dreams for some other fellow prisoners. And the one that he depended on to get him out, or to at least bring his case to Pharaoh, he forgot about him very shortly. And then sometime later, Pharaoh has a dream, and this man remembers, and he pulls out Joseph. And Joseph comes out and interprets the dream, and again finds himself in a good place. There he is, now a responsible party. Egypt is facing famine years down the road, and he needs to prepare for it. And in doing that, he prepared after the 7 years of plenty. They began to have the 7 years of drought, and Jacob's, or Joseph's brothers, are affected by that, and they decide to go down to Egypt. Verse 42, chapter 42 of Genesis, it says this: "And when Jacob saw that there was corn in Egypt, Jacob said unto his sons, Why do you look one on another? And he said, Behold, I have heard that there is corn in Egypt. Get you down thither and buy for us from thence, that we may live and not die. And Joseph's 10 brothers went down to buy corn in Egypt. But Benjamin, Joseph's brother Jacob, sent not with his brethren, for he said, Lest peradventure mischief befall him. And the sons of Israel came to buy corn among those that came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan." There Joseph meets his brothers. Joseph was a governor over all the land, and it was he that sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brethren came and bowed down themselves before him with their faces to the earth. And Joseph saw his brethren, and he knew them. But he made himself strange unto them, and spake roughly unto them. And he said unto them, Whence came ye? And they said, From the land of Canaan to buy food. And you know the story, how that he tested them. He wanted to see if they were the same kind of men that had sold him to the Ishmaelites years ago. And he found out that they weren't, that they were true, that they were the one thing he did find out is that they were still struggling with guilt many years after this, that they had abused him and had sold him. They were struggling with guilt. But he also attested them to the point where he saw that they had really repented, and they cared for the life of Benjamin, and they cared for Jacob, their father, and so on. So Joseph, when he finally made himself known to them, he told them that you intended it for bad, but God intended it for good. All things work together for good to them that love God. And he forgave them freely, and they accepted his forgiveness. Although, you know, they didn't understand that entirely, and they accepted it up to a point. But when Jacob died, they went again to Joseph, and they figured now Joseph's going to have revenge. And he assured them that that was not in his heart. How does faith look? Faith looks like forgiveness a lot of times. When things are really tough, when things are really rough, when there's nothing else to do but forgive. Joseph made commandment that his bones not be left in Egypt. And he's listed as a hero of faith. The most significant thing he did was forgive those wrongs that were done to him by the people that he should have been able to trust. There was nothing else to do but to forgive. Faith looks like forgiveness when it's necessary, when there's nothing else to do. I clipped out a letter in a recent happening here for a man that lost his wife and son, excuse me, a wife and two daughters in the Gatlinburg fires that were caused by two teenagers that were charged with aggravated arson. And this is what he says to the two teenagers who started the wildfires. People stop me on the streets every day and ask me the same question: what can we do for you? My answer has always been the same. My answer has been the same every time: love those closest to you a little stronger. Hold them a little tighter. Don't take a single moment for granted. As I learned of your arrest last week, I sat in silence for a long time. You may be too young to understand this, but even through this tragedy, I can feel God with me and my son. I have felt my daughters and my wife touch me from heaven. I have seen them give me signs that they are looking down on us. They are happy. They are at peace. They are together. As humans, it is sometimes hard to show grace. We hold grudges. We stay angry. We point the finger and we feel we have to lay the blame somewhere. It is human nature and completely understandable. But I did not raise my children to live with hate. I did not teach my girls or my son to point the finger at others. John 8:7 says, "Let he who has not sinned cast the first stone." Forgiveness isn't for you. It's for me. It's for my son. It's for Constance, Shlo, and Lily. It is for this community who has lost so much in this tragedy. I, as well as countless others, have been changed forever because of your actions. It is up to you to seek God's forgiveness. I hope someday you can seek it and be at peace. I forgive you. My son forgives you. My wife and beautiful girls forgive you. We know you didn't mean for this to happen. We know you would take it all back if you could. We will pray for you. Every day we will pray for your parents and your family members. Every day we will pray for your peace. We will show you grace. Why? Because that's what Jesus would do. Faith, hope, love. The greatest of these is love. That was an open letter that he put on his Facebook page to show that he has forgiven the people that were responsible for taking his wife and children from him. What else to do? Faith is forgiveness when those things come. What does faith look like? Jesus said when he saw their faith, he was able to work. And today, as he sees our faith, is he able to do what he wants to do in our life?